Mr. Shannon Ratliff will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 7 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. The case we present today is a case of whether a rule of property law, upon which many boundaries in South Texas along the Gulf Coast have been set, whether that rule of property law will be set aside and held for naught. I normally try to always follow my mother's advice and find something good to say about something, or I don't talk at all. I have a hard time with the Court of Appeals opinion in that regard, because I believe it contains several overarching errors.
How much of the coastline has been established using the test that you say the court should be following in this case?
Justice Hankinson, it is hard for me to give you a percentage, but many of the large tracts on the southern Laguna Madre, in fact, have had their boundaries determined either by under agreed judgments with the General Land Office or under adjudications based upon the use of tide gauges and the use of mean high or high water. As you move up the coast, you run into more common law grants. But again, common law grants are just as impacted by the holding below as a civil law grant, because again, the common law grant has been based on mean high water.
Are there any cases in which the seashore boundary has been determined other than by mean high or high tide or mean high tide?
There are some. You're talking about in the state of Texas, Justice Gonzalez?
Yes.
There are some that were determined early. At a time, for example, Galveston versus Menard dealt with a tidal grant in Galveston. As I recall, in that one, they utilized the highest tide in winter, which was, I think, a rule that many lawyers believed was the law until Lutz came in 1958.
Since Lutz,
I'm not aware of a single determination of a tidal boundary. Outside of Texas, as I recall, there are 18 states that use a version of mean high water principally by tide gauge. I cannot vouch for every state. There are another six, mostly in the New England states, that use mean low water, but again, determined in the way that NOAA determines those tidal datums, and that's by the use of tide gauges.
Have there been any cases where the boundary's been determined by vegetation line or bluff line?
There have been some cases, certainly in Texas, dealing with the open beaches law that have been determined, but that really deals with the extent of the public easement. But it does affect title, as you know. But under the Open Beaches Act, vegetation line is, in fact, a marker. I'm not aware...
Is it a marker for the easement, or is it a marker for the shoreline?
Well... As I'm afraid some people found out on Galveston Island and some other places, if their home extended over it, I suppose what they were doing, the base fee remains as is, but the right of the public to access and to not have that access impeded by a structure is in fact controlled by the vegetation line. And of course, that act was enacted because of the concerns expressed on the motion for rehearing by Alex Pope out of Fort Worth on behalf of Brazoria County, in which they raised the question as to whether mean high or high water would not mean that people would be totally excluded from the public beach. The legislature acted in the next session to secure that easement along the beachfront on the Gulf side. But I am not aware, Justice Gonzalez, of any state that utilizes the vegetation line as the determiner on the question of boundary. Now, what we have here is that the Court of Appeals created what I believe to be a very limited reservation in the motion for rehearing in Lutz and turned it into an alternative method of establishing mean high water. After the original Lutz opinion had come down, as I indicated, Alex Pope filed a motion and said that he was very concerned, particularly on the Gulf side, because he was not convinced. In fact, he remained unconvinced that where you measured the height of the tidal datum, mean high or high water, by tide gauge out here, he did not believe that that necessarily would translate on a horizontal plane on the ground to a point where it would be coincident with the lateral reach of the water on the shore. And he argued very strongly that the court should not foreclose the possibility of showing that the lateral reach of the water was greater than would be indicated by the tidal datum. In response to that, the Supreme Court said that while they weren't aware of any science that would allow that, that they were not going to foreclose it. But it is very clear that in the motion for rehearing, they were still dealing with mean high or high water as the tidal datum which sets the boundary. And they simply were saying, if somebody comes up with scientific devices that would allow you to show that the run-up on the shore was either higher or lower than that indicated by simply translating the vertical datum line to the shore, we're not going to foreclose it. The fact of the matter is, in this case, as the trial judge said, he said, let's be intellectually honest here. The state has not established it, even if that were an exception. The state has not established it in this case. Their surveyor said he was unaware of any scientific basis upon which you could make that kind of determination over a one-year period where you could then relate it to the 18.6-year tidal epoch, which is the reason, which is the basis of Lutz. Also, Mr. Shine, the state surveyor in this case, said, I didn't locate my line in relation to any water level. I simply went to where I believed historically the line had always been. What Mr. Shine's testimony did was attempt to convert what was clearly a call for the Laguna Madre into a call for a fixed line. And to justify that position, he took surveys done long after the fact and said, well, they located them here, and that's where I see it on the ground, and that's where I think the line should be. Everything he looked at were the exact indicia that the Supreme Court rejected in Lutz, because they found that they were too transitory, that there was too much room for disagreement, and who can stand out on the property for 365 days so that you can relate what you are observing to a tidal epoch where you get the stability that is provided by the method?
Isn't the state's position is that looking at this land grant from the time that it was granted historically, that in fact, regardless of the language of the grant, that the call was the Laguna Madre, that in fact what was intended was would be the edge of the mud flats? I mean, that's the state's argument, as
I understand
it.
I think that is exactly right. And
that
it is
we should, that the intent at that time was, even though they used that terminology, what they really meant was the edge of the mud flats.
Yes, you're exactly right, Your Honor. The only problem that we've got there is that what the boundary law says is that the intent is controlled by the calls. And the call in this case was for a natural monument.
Is there evidence, though, that the predecessors in the chain of title for your clients treated it as being a boundary at the edge of the mud flats?
No, as a matter of fact, okay. The state tries to argue that. But the fact of the matter is, in 1904, in State versus Spawn, there was litigation between the predecessors entitled to the Kennedy Memorial Foundation and the state, in which the state tried to establish its ownership of the Big Beretta. After the trial court in that case, and it was later appealed and affirmed, the trial court called for the meanders of the said west margin or shore of said Laguna Madre. That is the way it was described. Again, and then there was a confirmation survey. You've heard about the Maddox survey. That was a confirmation survey based on State v. Spawn. Then again, in 1938, there was a case, Walker versus Kennedy, cited in our brief. in which a person came in and sought to claim a vacancy between the big and the little Beretta, and also to the east of these two grants. The trial court held that there was no vacant land between the eastern boundary of the big and little Beretta and the Laguna Madre.
Mr. Ratliff, the state argues that the actions by Jose Bailey, the predecessor in interest to the foundation, petitioning for the Mesquite Rincon, indicates that initially the boundary was at the mudflat. How do you respond to that?
Well, you got to go back, I think, to what we said in our brief, and that is, when you deal with Spanish and Mexican grants, the purpose of a survey there was to determine the quantity so that was not usable as pasture land to not be included in the computation. But the fact of the matter is one of the reasons that the call for a natural monument such as a river or such as a lake or like the Laguna Madre, one of the reasons that it is given the supreme dignity among calls is because a surveyor there on any given time is recording a transitory event. It is his opinion about where the meanders are. The meanders don't constitute the boundary. The natural monument does.
Isn't it at all significant that you and your predecessors didn't pay taxes on this land until the last few decades?
I don't think it's significant, Your Honor, in light of what I thought I remember the trial court's ruling as being that he kept that out, but he may not have. But I don't believe that ought to control on the question of title. The fact of the matter is that might be important if we were trying to claim it by adverse possession, but that wouldn't work very well against the state anyway. What we are saying is the call was to the Laguna Madre. It's to the Laguna Madre where you find it today.
Mr. Allen,
yes, sir.
What is all the discussion about the mean high tide and the shine survey if what your argument is that this is just a monuments case and the Laguna Madre is the monument?
Well, because a call for the Laguna Madre under Lutz is a call for that point of intersection on the shore between the vertical datum, mean high or high water, as established by a tide gauge, and where it intersects with the surface of the land.
But your argument says that if we accept your mean high tide
right.
watermark, it puts you underwater on the east side of the Intracoastal Waterway.
No, sir. No, that's not. No, that's not our argument.
You said, but you're only requesting the land up to the west side.
What we said is that we made no attempt to determine the line of mean high or high water as it might have applied in its original condition. What we did, we voluntarily restricted our claim to the west bank of the Intracoastal. And we believe that was entirely consistent because it maintained the riparian or literal nature of the tract. Now, the state has tried to make a big deal out of it.
I'm lost. You're saying the Laguna Madre, as it originally existed when this grant occurred, was not west of the Intracoastal Waterway. It was not as far west as it is now.
The honest truth is, Judge Enoch, I don't know that anybody knows where it was. You certainly have historical documents that say that there was water there. As a matter of fact, Defendant's Exhibit 3 that's relied upon by the state, one of the surveyors talks about water of the Laguna Madre adjacent to Mesquite Rincon. So the fact of the matter is the state has introduced a whole lot of speculation about what the condition was out there before the Intracoastal Waterway was cut. But we believe that simply because the federal government and the state have come in and cut a line through the property should not deprive us of the riparian nature of the tract. And we believe the call was clearly for a riparian tract. I hope I've responded to you, Your Honor.
Any other questions?
Yes, I have one more, Chief. Mr. Ratliff, if we agree with you that mean high or high tide is what must be applied to determine the boundary of these two land grants, does the jury's answer to question number two support judgment in favor of the foundation, or would the case need to be remanded?
I think it would support judgment in case of the foundation.
And
I believe,
why is that?
And the reason is because there would have been a determination that the land west of that line, in fact, it was admitted by the state surveyor, is all above the line that was placed on the west, on the western bank of the intercoastal waterway. That was not even contested, and as a matter of fact, the trial judge said, if you're right on what you say, then we don't even need to have a trial. Everybody concedes it's above 1 foot, and therefore, we do believe it would support judgment, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
John Smith will present arguments for the respondents.
May it please the court. Ben Vaughn, John McFarland, and I, Mike McKetta, are pleased to represent Commissioner Dewhurst of the state of Texas. There are four facts that I think are important for all of us to understand and that very much help on understanding of the unique nature of the disputed area. The first is that even the testimony by the foundation's witnesses established that there has been no material change in the 200 years.
Mr. McKetta, isn't the question here how we interpret the land grant?
It would be, Your Honor.
All right, and what test are we to apply to interpret these land grants?
I think the most helpful test would be to look for the intent of the sovereign that granted when there is undisputed evidence that lets you find that intent, as here. The question that Justice Gonzalez asked earlier and that asked earlier are very helpful questions to guide us. Justice Gonzalez asked us whether Surveyor Cano and original grantee Jose Fernando Bailly didn't show us something about the original intent, and they did. May I ask the members of the court to refer to tab one. Tab one shows a jut out area.
But Mr. McKetta, before you get to that, if a court is faced with a land grant and a dispute over what the grant is, what is a court required to look at and what is it precluded from looking at to determine where the boundaries of the land grant are?
Every time this court has addressed that question, it has said that finding the intent of the grantor is the lodestar, the pole star that is looked for, and Lute said nothing different. Lute
All right,
said
and,
where
and,
there's...
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Lute said, in a circumstance where it was undisputed that there was change, water previously had been present on a daily basis all the way to the ranch land. It was no longer. That was the finding in the trial court. The Court of Appeals said nobody disputed that finding, and the Supreme Court, this court, took that as a given. Where it had changed but was a literal boundary determined by a daily water boundary, Lutz looked for where is that boundary today and how do we determine it.
But Lutz also looked to how we were to interpret a land grant under the civil law before Texas adopted the common law.
It did. It looked.
And
for
so
the
it actually looked to how we should interpret the language, and in this instance, what the language in the grant is at the boundary of the Laguna Madre,
Your
or
Honor,
something to that effect.
In that case, it was La Ribera de la Mar, the shoreline of the sea. In this case, it is La Orilla de la Laguna Madre, the margin or edge of the Laguna Madre. It is a natural monument. It is.
And that's what I understand the foundation is asking us to look to, is that in fact the grant does have a call that is the monument, which is the edge of the Laguna Madre. And so that is what the grant was, and we should look no further.
That's what they say, and they say, as Mr. Ratliff talked, he said the call was to the Laguna Madre, and that is not correct. The call was to La Orilla, the margin or edge, and that word margin was used consistently even in the title to Mifflin Kennedy, then by him to his son John Kennedy, in instruments that make unambiguous that they believe the southeast quarter of their land was underneath the isthmus leading to Mesquite.
But wouldn't the use of the word margin have a legal meaning in terms of interpreting and looking at the grant rather than looking to the kinds of historical evidence about the party's conduct that you're asking us to look at?
A word can easily have a legal meaning, Your Honor.
And why shouldn't that control in interpreting the land grant?
Suppose that undisputable evidence shows how the parties used that word. Suppose that's so.
Do we have that here?
We have it here completely, Your Honor. We have it from Cano, we have it at the Little Beretta from De La Fuente, and we have it in each of the instruments that I was mentioning earlier, and I would be delighted to show briefly to the court where we find it. When Cano, as I was pointing out, that this 55 square miles inside of the intracoastal waterway is the area in dispute. The jutting out area is called Mesquite Rincon, as the court now knows, and there is a little isthmus leading to it. When Cano was surveying the Big Beretta, Bailly said, in addition to the Big Beretta, which was granted to him by separate instrument, I would also like the Mesquite Rincon. Do you see, Your Honor, that if the Mesquite Rincon was already included in the grant, then there would be meaningless gesture to grant and pay for an additional four CTOs of land that was called the Mesquite Rincon and that was ranch land. It jutted out into what is called the disputed area and would not have needed a grant if the margin here really had been somewhere else, as the Kennedy Foundation says. What about the Little Beretta? The Little Beretta had a most unusual geographic triangulation. And at tab number 5, we see first the Spanish, and then we see a portion of the Spanish, and then we see an English translation on the second page. But if the court looked carefully, there is a rectangle that was granted or was intended to be granted of 5 CTOs. But the surveyor, De La Fuente, with the grantee, Salinas, expressly made a change so that it was not rectangular. The surveyor, in the translation, one can find it, the surveyor staked out from point A down to point B and said at point F we crossed the margin of the Laguna Madre. At point F, this tiny point here, and that's where everybody since has found the margin of the Laguna Madre except Surveyor Clunch. And what did the surveyor then say? Because that was useless, it was, the translation by the foundation says excluded, our translation says minus, it was not part of the grant, and instead an equal area triangle was extended out here. It would not have happened if the grant included an area beyond the margin. The grant expressly excluded the mudflats that were beyond the margin. But
Ms.
even
McKenna,
more important,
I'm curious. If the calls say one thing and the parties act in a manner that's contrary to the call, what should a court do? Should we?
There are mistaken call cases that deal with that. Here there is no mistaken call, Your Honor. At the time of the grant and at the time of the instrument by which the Kennedys acquired this property and maintained it, there never has been any mistake. They have called the margin. They have known where the margin is and have known that it's inside the Mesquite Rincon area. If we look at the partition deed at tab 6 by which Mifflin Kennedy acquired title by partition deed with Mr. Durst, at tab 6, the language shows us this, referring back to the master map at tab 1, they found a point on the margin that would be the southeast corner of the partitioned land and said in the instrument, tab 6, it is south of the isthmus of the Mesquite Rincon. That can't be over here.
What is the legal definition of a margin?
There are dictionary definitions that are given. What Gregorio Lopez said is it is where the furthest reach of the sea is Ribera seashore. Margin was always thought of to be the edge or the rim of the Ribera. It is a physical feature that has been created, measured by the waters, but it is a physical feature that can be identified, has been identified by the original grantors, by every surveyor, every map maker, every atlas, every geologist, every court ever looking at this area until Surveyor Clotch found a different line 6 miles away and couldn't find that line. Placed it in a channel, but couldn't find that line.
What authority would we look to for this definition of margin, legal definition of margin?
Your Honor, we have discussed in our briefing the word margin, including the Spanish. I will ask that we send a prompt letter citing the pages in our brief dealing with that.
Okay.
But what I believe the cases of this court and every civil and common law court say, when you're looking for intent, when you're looking for the line that the grantor gave, especially a sovereign, where every indulgence is in favor of the sovereign, if you can find clear evidence of what was intended, that controls over everything else. Lutz was a case involving change, unlike this case, that said where there has been change, we must now find where is the equivalent, where is the moved boundary.
But
here there's been no move.
Lutz doesn't just say if there's been change. Lutz would also apply if the boundary had never been determined before.
It could be. Look at the unusual feature.
Hasn't Lutz been applied to make these boundary determinations uniformly along Texas coastal lines since
Lutz
it was
has,
decided?
And Lutz
regardless
has.
Of whether or not someone was claiming a change and in fact attempting to determine the boundary or the shoreline, if that's what was the appropriate determination?
I think it would be an overstatement to say regardless. If the court recalls, Mr. Lutz, who purportedly won the Lutz case, does not own those mudflats. He was unable to prove that the change was in his favor instead of the state's favor.
Well, that's because there was accretion involved in that particular case. In this case, does not.
Oh, Your Honor, we say that it does not because there have been no changes, but look at, if you would, at tab 17. Tab 17 shows a most unusual feature of what Mr. Clotch's line would do. In the original adjudication that courts read about, the Humble Oil versus Sun case, the orange tracts were in dispute. Does one see a green island? It's called Coral Island. Coral Island was conceded, and the Fifth Circuit points that out, to be state property. And in addition, the court found that it believed there had been no change, the boundary was where it always had been, but if there had been any accretion, the court said, the land has accreted in favor of the state. Your Honor, Clotch, by drawing a line artificially and showing nothing else but an artificial line that he can't really place, he puts it into a ditch that never existed before, Clotch now has taken Toro Island and any accretions that existed for Toro Island away from the Permanent School Fund to the Kennedy Foundation without showing anything in its favor. This is an area, if any, where accretion is important because there is undisputed and adjudicated state land, adjudicated as well as having been conceded by predecessors in title, which now would change willy-nilly with no logic, with no change in circumstances. The features that are most pressing about this case and that distinguish it, I think, from so many cases are the unusual topography. We have put, and it may be a little cryptic to show, Your Honors, but let me try, at tab 13.
Mr. McKay, can I just interrupt a second?
Of course, Your Honor.
If we disagree with you that the boundary has not been established, or we can't establish the boundary, then does Lutz apply, and then does the state lose? Because in Lutz we rejected establishing a boundary using a vegetation line or bluff line.
That's, of course, the way that Mr. Ratliff consistently has briefed it and said it today, but that's not what the Lutz court said. It rejected a bluff line or vegetation line marking where the waters at some undisclosed period in the past evidently did reach. Here the evidence is that regularly, year in, year out, every year, the waters of the Laguna Madre bathe all the way up to the bluff line that exists now, and the bluff line prevents it from going further.
And that
many
only,
parts,
how often does that happen a year?
It depends what part you're looking at. There are areas, in fact, at tab, I believe 15, tab 14, we show one area that in a half year's time, more than two-thirds of the days they were inundated. Other areas are inundated less frequently, but, Your Honor, there are some areas of these mudflats that are wet more days than they are dry. There are others that are inundated much less frequently.
But there are roads through these mudflats and vehicles drive through them.
Oh no! In fact, the testimony was no one. It would be a foolish person to go out in a pickup truck, and we asked why. Occasionally, dune buggies are used in areas close to Mesquite Rincon, but this is an area where one can find wrecked ships coming right up to the margin that I've referred to.
There is no authority, though, that uses a bluff line or vegetation line for determining a shoreline.
Let me give three examples, Your Honor. First, in the Florida cases, according to the testimony, the record in this case, that is how things are determined, where there is not a daily tidal influence, as there's not here. In Texas, let's think of two examples. The Lutz property is still owned by the state up to the bluff line or the vegetation line. It still is. And the Humble Oil against Sun case indicated, although Mr. Ratliff quotes it a little differently, the Fifth Circuit says that the trial court found the lines, found them at the margin, and that those were inconsistent with claims by the upland owner further out to the east. But the court is correct that since the 1958 Lutz decision, the rare occasion when this has been litigated has used the mean higher high water tide on the Gulf side. That depicts pretty well where the water goes. There is a daily tide. In fact, there are charts here that show the difference between the types of tidal influences that exist one place and another. At tab 9, one can see that there are in the yellow daily tidal influences, daily fluctuations that are perceptible and important in the Pacific Coast, the Borax case, in Galveston and Corpus Christi. But inside this area, the only perceptible, except for 1 or 2% influence, the movement of water is on long-term tidal constituents. They're still tidal constituents. They're constituents that typically have a 13-day cycle, a 14-day cycle, a 28-day cycle, a semi-annual or an annual cycle. But they're regular. And 81% of the fluctuation of the water can be found in regular tidal-oriented movement. It's regular, but not on a daily basis, as it has been for hundreds and hundreds of years.
What specific task did the state ask Mr. Schein to perform?
Mr. Schein was asked to find the boundary based on the grants, and Mr. Schein looked at the historic evidence, looked at all of the historic maps and surveys thereafter, and determined a boundary by meander, surveying meander points with more frequency, but still establishing that the same physical natural monument could be located as the margin, and that tracked the very footsteps of the original surveyors. The reason that a water measurement did not make sense, and the reason the foundation has so much trouble locating where is its boundary if it did not generously give up a lot of area up, the reason is that there is no boundary, and that's because if you looked at tab 13, in the profile of the Laguna Madre, down from Port Isabel up towards Corpus Christi and beyond, there is a single area where all elevations are above sea level. These mudflats, uniquely, Lutz is not that way. The King Ranch that has an amicus brief is not that way. They have always had, reaching east from their ranch, a daily water presence that could be seen and observed every day at whatever level it was. These flats have regular inundation, but not on a daily basis. And importantly, when the water goes up, it doesn't recede willy-nilly like a high touch of a wave, a high wave might. The water maps that were Exhibit 100 at trial, and here we've brought samples of them in Tab 2, the water maps show that when the water goes up to high levels, as it does every spring and every autumn, it covers these areas much more frequently, but
Mr. Schein went out and did his survey by a meander.
He did.
Going from monument to monument. That's not consistent with the grant.
Oh, it is the margin. It is the very margin that was the natural monument that's La Oria and mentioned in the grant, and it's the same monument that Cano found, De La Fuente found, Koch found, Maddox found, every surveyor and every adjudication has found until Mr. Klotz found a different line.
It seems to me that that takes us back to what the definition of a margin is.
It either does that or it takes us back to finding what it is that the grantor, as well as the grantees and their successors, have consistently believed to be their boundary because the feature and the word were identical. The margin and the feature could easily be found. There was no daily water presence. Why was there not? If you go eastward from the ranch and look at contours, do you remember that they say it's 0.5 feet above sea level at one tide gauge, 0.7 at another, and they said we'll just settle for 1 foot above sea level? If you go eastward, you never find anything as low as 1 foot above sea level. Everything's above that, unless you stop in the channel, which you could do since 1949. Or, before 1949, where would you go to look for that daily water average measurement? You'd have to keep going, keep going, keep going. Up Padre Island, across to the Gulf, is the first time that you would ever find a measurable average daily water basis. This is a unique area. It never had the riparian rights Mr. Ratliff talks about. They never had a daily access to any salt water. On a regular basis, the inundation that flowed regularly covering and uncovering in 1809 and still does today without change gives them on those occasions salt water to their upland, but not on a daily basis. Your Honor.
Is it the uniqueness of this property that is your answer to the argument that your theory presupposes a very subjective process, that an expert thinks this is the history, or this is the marker, or this is the meander line, but another expert sees it differently? That is far more subjective than a tidal kind of measurement.
The court accurately says there is precision available from Mr. Klotz's method. It is precise but woefully inaccurate. It measures something 6 miles from any perceptible shoreline. For 3,000 years, surveyors have used surveying methods. At this very location, the nature that the court is asking about does not result in different findings. That is, every surveyor has been able to find this margin. Different surveyors use different numbers of meander points that they stake. So if you drew lines between meander points, you may have differences, but everyone can find where it is, everyone can stake points on it, and it's 6 miles from where the foundation now claims, and the 55 square miles that always have been east of any meander line of the margin have always belonged to the state, Your Honor.
Well, what is your answer to the argument that this will create, your position creates a great deal of uncertainty in Gulf land titles?
My beginning point would be this. Lutz, which left a boundary at a bluff line because accretion hadn't been shown, is just as much disjointed from potentially other boundaries as this would be. But the important point about this feature is uniquely, this area never had water on a daily presence to the east, and therefore there never could have been a line to the east that purported to be measurable by daily water or averaging of daily water. And that was what makes this unique. The court, we have urged, re-examined the Spanish and the Latin, but it's not necessary to do in this case. We've urged that because we think that is proper scholarship. But this case says that where there's been no change in conditions, there should be no change in boundary. And it says that where there is no daily water that ever was present to the eastern boundary should not be measured by a daily water averaging. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Ratliff?
Yes, sir.
As you know, the state contends
it is clear that intent is controlling, but what the courts have said in dealing with these ancient grants is that the intent is controlled by the language in the grant. And Justice Hankinson asked the question, and that is, if you'll look at page 21 of our reply brief, in this case, you will find that the courts have consistently said shore, edge, margin, bank, are calls for the natural monument. They are not called for something short. Rudder versus Ponder said that they were not going to stop at a bluff line, that they were going to go to the river, go to the water. And I think it's very interesting in this case. Council does a wonderful job of weaving some history and some facts in, but one of the things that he omits is De La Fuente, who surveyed one of these tracks and called for the margin of the Laguna Madre, also surveyed Padre Island, in which he called for the margin of the Laguna, the margin of the Brazos de Santiago, and the shores of the sea and the Laguna. That was held to convey title to the mean high waterline. Not short, not someplace removed from the water, but to the waterline. And we've cited other cases and other authorities. City of Austin versus Hall, the margin of a stream. There are other cases that say when you call for the bank of the Brazos River, that's a call for the river. A call for the Canadian is a call for the gradient boundary of the Canadian under the law. And that is the law that we say you apply. Now, there was a lot of talk about Mesquite Rincon and how that was inconsistent with the claim. It is not inconsistent with the claim, so long as what the surveyors and the people were observing was consistent with the other property being submerged or sea bottom. Then it would not be included in the grant, because that would have belonged to the King of Spain, or it would have belonged to the ruling authorities of the state of Tamaulipas itself. Also, if you will read very carefully the defendant's own exhibit, Defendant's Exhibit 3, it is clear in this case that Bailly is asking for an allotment over and above that to which he's entitled. And he does it on the basis that this location is unusable by anyone else, and the king will be deprived of the revenue that would otherwise come from surveying this tract of land. So I do not believe that it's at all inconsistent, but I think you don't need to go there. You need to go to the grant language, and a call for the margin of the shore is a call for the Laguna Madre.
Well, Mr. McKenna mentioned that within the survey that's been done by the foundation.
Yes.
That, and I can't remember the name of the island, that there's an island that the state
owns. Toro Island.
That is within that, in fact, would you respond to that?
Yes. The only reason Toro Island would have been within any survey would have not been included historically is because when the district judge in Sun the Humble called it, he used the highest wave in winter as his test. When he used that test, obviously, there are times, as the foundation has said all along, there are times when there is water on these flats. That would, in fact, surround what's identified on the topo sheets as Toro Island. You can go back through their historical topo sheets. You will never see Toro standing alone. Toro, it's always an identified mark, just as a number of others. Mesquite Rincon is an identified mark. But the fact of the matter is, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy that Toro would have been an island at the time of the grant if you used like the reach of the highest tide in winter, as did the district judge in that case. Now,
How do you respond to their argument that accretion has to be proved?
Well, because we're not claiming accretion. If you look in our briefs, what we say is the very nature of a title boundary. And this has been cited in Davis versus City of Corpus Christi, been cited in the Port Isabel case. It was cited in Bailly, where the argument was made, how come they get to go pick up all this extra land? And what the court said is, by its very nature, a tidal boundary, ipso facto, changes with the level of the water. Our claim is that the burden on us was to show that the land was above mean higher high water. We did it one better. We actually established a line that far exceeded any measurement of mean higher high water in the Laguna Madre.
Mr. Ratliff,
yes,
this is why I'm still, I guess I'm still confused.
Okay.
And maybe I'm misunderstanding. Your argument is that you have a monument that's the boundary.
Correct.
And the monument is the edge of this Laguna Madre. Right?
Maybe not explaining it correctly. Actually, I believe in title boundary law, Your Honor, the actual boundary is the vertical elevation of mean high or high water.
Well, let me start over again. If this was a river,
all right,
and said the banks of a river,
right, sir,
we'd have some sort of formula that would tell you if the river rose or fell, and we'd find out where that is.
Correct.
You're saying the Laguna Madre is the boundary of this deal.
That's correct.
But Mr. Maketa argues there's, I mean, this is land, for the most, right to the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, that's just not so, but that's,
well, I mean,
I understand that's his argument.
Okay, that's where my confusion comes. You say that there is water in this lagoon year-round.
I'm saying there was water in this, that as far as we know, there was water in the Laguna Madre at the time of the grant, and that therefore the call was not a mistaken call. The call was to a body of water that the surveyor identified as the Laguna Madre.
And so your effort now is to find where that body of water was at the time the grant occurred.
Our effort now is to find where is the current line of mean high or high water in light of the fact that circumstances have now been changed by the federal government and the state by cutting through this channel. But our burden, we believe, is only to find the line of mean high or high water as it exists today, because as a riparian grant, we are entitled to go to that point of intersection with the land. I hope I answered your question.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
That concludes the argument in the first clause. The court will take a brief recess.